Hello, friends. Welcome back to Love Will Tear Us Apart, a podcast on your favorite complicated couples. I'm back with part two of the epic saga of singer Michael Hutchence and rock journalist Paula Yates. In part one, I talked about Michael's origins in Australia and Hong Kong, the success of his band In Excess, and his famous girlfriends, such as the singer Kylie Minogue and supermodel Helena Christensen. I also talked about Paula's origins as an only child who was emotionally neglected by her parents and who started going to parties and taking drugs in her early teens. It is when she met Bob Geldof in her late teens that Paula got grounded and enjoyed 15 years of being a mom, a popular rock journalist, and wife to one of England's most beloved citizens. Now I'm going to pick up where I left off in part one, with the infamous 1994 interview between Michael and Paula. The interview that would raise eyebrows and kick off rumors of their affair. So just a reminder, Paula interviewed Michael first in 1985 and supposedly had a crush on him for years afterwards. Some people think they started an affair in the 1980s, but it's most evident they started seeing each other in the early 90s, while Paula was still married to Bob Geldof and Michael was still seeing Helena Christensen. What really tipped off the public about their affair was this steamy 1994 interview on Paula's Channel 4 show, The Big Breakfast. So if you haven't seen this interview, I recommend you watch it right now. Go ahead, pause the podcast and watch these 6.5 minutes of softcore porn. Welcome back. Are you blushing? If you didn't watch the interview, all I'm going to say is that the two are literally entwined in bed with Paula's bare legs draped over Michael's body. They talk and look like two people who are about to get it on. And according to Jerry Agar, Paula's publicist, the two had actually seen each other the night before, and the interview was just an extension of their romance. The interview is both charming and a little squirmy, since they kind of poke fun at Michael's then-girlfriend, Helena. They acted like there was no one else in the room, and I guess the interview is kind of romantic. Quickly after the episode aired, Paula and Michael went public with their relationship, and the subsequent media storm would have a disastrous effect on their lives. By all accounts, Bob was devastated that Paula left him. In a 2011 interview, he said, "When she left me, I was destroyed. I didn't understand why. Never saw it coming." He admits to wanting to have killed himself, but didn't because of their three children. To this day, he still speaks about Paula with love in his voice. Side note, the actress Claire King claims she had a long-term affair with Bob while he was still with Paula, and there are other hints of infidelity on the part of Bob. As for Helena, she too was reportedly blindsided and deeply upset to learn that her boyfriend had been cheating on her. In Jerry Agar's book, Paula, Michael, and Bob, she paints Paula and Michael's love story like a romance novel of a couple predestined to be together. Paula was a neglected wife who was intellectually and sexually awakened by the sensual and caring Michael. If you're one of those folks who used to dream of getting it on with Michael Hutchence, Agar's book is your chance to know how he was in the bedroom. This podcast is PG, so I won't get into it too much, but there's a story about an oyster getting lost in someone's body. So there was something kind of magical about Paula, and Michael obviously felt it. In the beginning of their courtship, he was pretty nuts about the smart, beautiful, and funny Paula, and he told his manager that Paula was the greatest thing for him. The people close to him felt that he loved that she was maternal, but obviously very sensual and intelligent too. and he enjoyed playing dad to her three children. This was all new to Michael, as he had been a bachelor for a long time. In her biography on her brother, Tina Hutchins said Michael was pretty upset about tearing apart the Geldof Yates family since his own parents divorced when he was young. But Paula and Michael obviously had a bond that was worth throwing their previous lives away for. Paula called Michael's crotch the Taj Mahal, and Michael called Paula his soulmate. While they appeared to be happy in the early days of their relationship, it wasn't without its stresses. The press was obsessed with the Yates-Geldof-Hutchins saga, and Paula was casted as a harlot who cheated on Saint Bob. However, it's also reported that Paula tipped off the press about her relationship with Michael and her divorce with Bob to make some money to pay for her increasing debts, since she no longer had a job and was still trying to reach a settlement with her ex. During this time, the usually even-keel Michael punched a photographer who had been hounding the couple. Between the stress of the media circus around his new relationship, his traumatic brain injury, and his growing dependencies on drinking, smoking, and drugs such as cocaine, opium, ecstasy, and sleeping pills, the Michael everyone knew was changing. By the end of 1995, Paula was pregnant with their one and only child. At the age of 35, Michael was thrilled to be having his first child, a daughter. However, he was hesitant to marry Paula, which is something that apparently deeply bothered her. I mean, why wouldn't it? He was also hesitant to give up entirely on his bachelor lifestyle, and Paula was concerned that he was regularly hooking up with other women. Since Michael had a pattern of cheating, her concerns were not unfounded. On July 22, 1996, 37-year-old Paula gave birth to Heavenly Harani Tiger Lily Hutchins at their home, with Michael by her side. While being a new dad brought him great joy, many people in his life saw Michael becoming increasingly more depressed and distressed. He was prescribed Prozac to help deal with the stress of Paula, Bob, fatherhood, recording with the band, and most notably, the press. So the press hounded not only Paula and Michael, but Bob as well. Though Paula initially wanted the press to be involved with her relationship with Michael and divorce with Bob, the press became an uncontrollable and unsympathetic monster that followed them day and night. Though everyone tried to stay amicable in the beginning, the Yates-Geldof divorce turned ugly over shared property and custody. Paula wanted to keep their marital home, and in a surprise twist, Michael let Bob and his new girlfriend, now wife, Jean Marine, stay in his home in Chelsea. In Tina Hutchison's book, she's critical of Paula, who she said was completely charming and kind in the beginning of her courtship with Michael, but who soon turned angry and unpredictable. She claims Paula did strange things like push Tiger Lily's stroller out into traffic, and that for some reason Tiger Lily slept all the time, like day and night, and the nanny would have to run her underwater to get her to wake up. In Jerry Agar's book, she implies that Tiger Lily's sleepiness was due to Paula taking 4 Prozacs a day. It is said by Tina and others that Paula had a mental illness, though I can't find confirmation of a diagnosis. When Tiger Lily was only a couple of months old, the children's nanny, Anita, found a brown substance in a tube of Smarties in Paula and Michael's London home while the couple was out of town. The next morning, Paula's children were reportedly playing with it. Concerned, Anita contacted Jerry, and they called a drug hotline. The conclusion was made that the drug was opium. When they called Paula about it, Paula brushed him off, so they called Bob, and Bob was livid. He immediately went to court to request 100% custody of his three girls. The story was leaked to the press, and all hell broke loose. Anita and Jerry both quit working for Paula, and Paula and Michael both believed that Bob had set everything up. They were terrified that Bob would try to take Tiger Lily in addition to Fifi, Peaches, and Pixie. Anita, Jerry, and Bob all deny that they had set up Paula and Michael. If the press hounded Paula, Michael, and Bob before, now it was worse. To deal with the stress, Paula and Michael began taking harder drugs in addition to their depression pills. Michael began feeling lonely in London, and he wanted to get out. He loved Paula, but he was becoming increasingly unhappy in the relationship. Life had become an epic drama. In addition to the press and fights with Bob, Paula was regularly threatening to break up with Michael or commit suicide. Tina accused Paula of fielding messages to Michael and alienating him from his friends and family. Jerry writes that Paula was good at creating a web of lies in order to get what she wanted out of people. To Paula's credit, postpartum depression, the stress of Michael's bachelor lifestyle, and the stress of her fighting with Bob probably played a role in her behavior. To get away from it all, Michael had started seeing an early 20-something woman named Erin in Los Angeles. In the last year of Michael's life, his friends and family knew he was unhappy, but no one suspected he would end his life. Not only was he the much-beloved Michael Hutchins, he had a small daughter he loved. Plus, INXS had a new album out, Elegantly Wasted, and Michael was trying to get his acting career off the ground. But his new paramour, Erin, was deeply concerned about his emotional state. She was privy to the phone calls between Paula and Michael, and Michael always got off the phone deeply distressed. Plus, even though the band had a new record, they weren't as popular as they had been during their Kick days, and Michael was becoming increasingly angsty about breaking out on his own. The tour was exhausting, and he was worried about sustaining his bills. Around this time, Paula tried to kill herself with pills and alcohol. She said, "I think I hoped it would make Bob realize that if he carried on pushing, that people couldn't live like this. I think there was an element of that. Just please stop." Her daughters had found her on the floor, unconscious, and they ran outside to get help. Paula's publicist, Jerry, thinks Paula's suicide attempt was a message to Michael. Tina Hutchins, bandmate Kirk Pengley, and Richard Lowenstein all said that Michael was planning on leaving Paula before he passed away. Kirk said, "Just prior to his death, that week or so, what he told me, he had a plan in place to basically split up with Paula." As 1997 was wrapping up, Paula and Michael wanted to spend the Christmas holiday in Australia with the four girls. Bob agreed to letting his three daughters go on holiday to Australia, but they'd have to have a tutor for the time they missed at school. But Bob had a change of heart after talking to the school and the children's psychiatrist, and he didn't want his daughters to miss school. This infuriated both Paula and Michael. Michael tried to convince Bob otherwise, but Bob felt strongly about it and requested that the court intervene regarding his rights as a parent. Michael flew from Los Angeles to Australia on November 18, 1997, to rehearse for the INXS Australian tour. He booked a room at the Ritz-Carlton in Sydney. Paula and Tiger Lily were still in London as Paula waited for the court to decide whether or not she could take the girls to Australia. For the next 4 days, while Michael rehearsed with INXS, He reached out to and saw several friends and family members, including his brother, father, and his former girlfriend, Michelle Bennett. Here's how the last hours of Michael's life played out. On November 21st, he went out to dinner with his father and stepmother. Afterwards, he met an old friend, Kim Wilson, and her boyfriend for drinks at his hotel's bar. They went up to his hotel room, where they continued drinking. He was anxiously waiting for a phone call from Paula about the court's decision, and he asked his friends to stay with him. Tired and drunk, they left around 5 a.m. At around 5:30, Michael got a phone call from Paula saying that the court case had been moved. Furious, Michael called Bob. This is what Bob has said publicly about the call. "He called me up in the early hours in the morning, and I couldn't understand a word he said. I just put the phone down." In the coroner's report, he stated that Bob said Michael was, quote, "hectoring and abusive and threatening." A hotel guest said they heard Michael shouting on the phone around the time he would have been talking to Bob. And he was screaming, "She's not your wife anymore. Stop interfering." Michael then left two messages for his manager in New York City, Martha Troops. In his first message to Martha, he said, "Martha, Michael here. I've fucking had enough." Martha called back and was unable to reach him. He also left a message for his former girlfriend, Michelle Bennett, who said he sounded drunk. On a second call, they were able to connect. Michelle said, "He just sounded totally exhausted and depleted in the most extreme way. He cried and asked her to come over." She rushed to the hotel within 20 minutes and knocked on the door, but Michael didn't answer. She figured he had fallen asleep and left a note at the front desk. Sadly, little did she know that her friend and former lover was dead on the other side of the door. Okay, trigger warning here. I'm about to talk more specifically about Michael's suicide. I've read numerous articles and reports on this, so I'll try my best. At 11:50 a.m., a maid entered Michael's room but had difficulty opening the door due to his body being against it. The naked Michael had hung himself with his snakeskin belt from the closure at the top of the door. The belt ultimately broke away from the weight, and Michael was left in the kneeling position against the door. He had cocaine, Prozac, alcohol, and prescription drugs in his system, and the coroner also found an infected burn on his finger that exposed the bone. Michael did not leave a suicide note, though there was a piece of paper with lyrics that was found, and most people in his orbit believe it was an impulsive decision based on the situation with Paula, Bob, and the kids. Side note, if you or anyone you know is experiencing thoughts of suicide, there's help. Call 1-800-273-8255. Back in England, Paula's friend Belinda ran to her house to give her friend the news before the press did. Paula says she punched her friend upon hearing that Michael was dead. Paula said, "It was awful. I was crying and saying, 'How can you say something like that to me?' It was just like I was dead from then on." Angry and devastated, Paula laid the blame squarely at Bob's feet. She said, "Bob Geldof murdered Michael Hutchins. That bastard killed Michael. He's called Saint Bob. That makes me sick. He killed my baby. We've had 3 years of this." Paula immediately got on a plane to Australia with Tiger Lily, and she was able to visit Michael's body. "It was the most private time I'll ever have with Michael. Ever," Paula said. "I would have taken him home with me. But it's all so strange because your automatic reaction is to want to make it better, and you can't make it better. You can't do anything. The powerlessness is just unimaginable. The shock of Michael's death was difficult for everyone who loved him. Paula, his family, his friends, his fans, the rock world, and Australia as a whole. Michael had never talked about suicide. So why did he take his own life? People close to him knew he was depressed, but this just all seemed so impossible. He was only 37 years old and had a baby he loved. Even his friend Bono was distraught. Bono ended up writing the song Stuck in a Moment You Can't Get Out of for Michael. Bono was mad that his friend had killed himself, and he felt Michael had found himself stuck. Here are some of the lyrics. And you are such a fool to worry like you do. I know it's tough, and you can never get enough of what you don't really need now. You've got to get yourself together. You've got stuck in a moment, and now you can't get out of it. Michael was given a funeral fit for royalty. After all, he was one of Australia's most beloved sons. Paula was there, as was Kylie and Helena. Crying fans stood out front of the church. You can watch some of the funeral on YouTube. Nick Cave, one of Michael's best mates, performed Into My Arms at the request that it was not filmed. According to the publicist that handled the funeral, Michael's divorced parents were not getting along, and a mentally ill man crashed the funeral, screaming, "I am the second coming!" Once the media circus of the funeral passed, Michael's loved ones were left in the quiet pain of dealing with their loved one's death. By all accounts, Paula struggled greatly and never fully recovered. Her emotional state was not eased by the discovery that the man she always thought was her father was not actually her father. 3 weeks after Michael died, she learned that Huey Green, her father's nemesis, was her real dad, even though her mother repeatedly denied it. Unable to cope with the ruling that Michael had killed himself and left her and Tiger Lily behind, Paula began telling the media that Michael most likely died from autoerotic asphyxiation. The coroner disputed this, and Michael's family was obviously horrified by this allegation from Paula. Michael's ashes were divided between his father Kel, his mother Patricia, and Paula, and Paula reportedly sewed his ashes into a pillow and slept with it every night. Soon, Paula was in rehab, reportedly for her mental health, but possibly also for drug dependency. She tried to take her own life, reportedly the same way Michael did, about 6 months after his passing. At this point, Bob was awarded full custody of their three children. In the years after Michael's death, Paula was in and out of rehab. She soon met a 20-something Michael lookalike and former heroin addict by the name of Kingsley O'Keefe. The affair was a short one, and Kingsley sold his story to the press. Concerned about the well-being of his granddaughter due to Paula's recent challenges, Michael's dad, Cal, launched a lawsuit to get custody of Tiger Lily, but later dropped it. During this time, there was an ongoing battle to divvy up Michael's estate. It was to be divided between nonprofits Michael had supported, his dad, mom, sister, brother, Paula, and Tiger Lily, with 50% going to his daughter. However, Michael's money was mostly tied up in offshore accounts put there by his shady lawyer, Colin Diamond. Diamond had managed to make himself sole beneficiary of much of Michael's estate, and while Michael's mother sued, the family and Paula were given only a fraction of Michael's fortune. Tiger Lily told Mystified director Richard Lowenstein that she has only seen £500 of her father's money to this day. As 1998 and 1999 went by, Paula slipped increasingly into debt and most likely into more drugs. She dated a known wild boy, reggae singer Finley Quay, who also looked like Michael, and she was reportedly seen wandering the streets barefooted. Her infrequent public appearances on TV or at British parties showed that the vivacious Paula, with a twinkle in her eye, was no more. The light had gone out. Paula looked older and exhausted. The singer Lily Allen was one of the last people to see her at a restaurant, dining with a neighborhood drug dealer. On September 17th, 2000, on Pixie's 10th birthday, 41-year-old Paula died in her home. The only person with her was her 4-year-old Tiger Lily. Paula had taken heroin, and though it wasn't a large amount, her body wasn't able to handle it. Paula used drugs, but she wasn't a heroin fiend. The heroin essentially made her body stop breathing. She was found deceased in her bed, naked, by her close friend who had become worried when Tiger Lily picked up the phone several times to say her mother was still asleep. Paula's death was ruled foolish and incautious behavior, but not a suicide. Bob had the difficult task of telling his young girls that their mother was not coming back. Though Paula had been a public pariah over the past few years, her ex-husband, her friends, celebrities, and even the press were saddened by her death. Bob put together her funeral, where Annie Lennox and Nick Cave attended, and Bono sang. She was reportedly buried with her pillow containing Michael's ashes. To this day, Bob still says wonderful things about his ex-wife and the mother of his children. He said, "She was really funny and really beautiful. As I've said before, all the grace and light and joy that I don't possess and that I need." In the same interview in 2002, he refused to call either Michael's death or Paula's death suicides, but rather accidents. The sole heir of Paula's estate was Tiger Lily, and after all her debts were paid off, all that was left was £14,000. Tiger Lily became a ward of the state in England. Bob petitioned to adopt her, as did Michael's mother and sister, but in the end, Bob won out. He wanted Tiger Lily to grow up with her 3 half-sisters, and the British courts agreed. It is often mentioned that Michael's enemy, Bob, the one person he hated, or thought he hated, got custody of his daughter in the end. Patricia and Tina were devastated and felt that Bob kept Tiger Lily from them. Tina said that when Michael's mother was dying, she asked to see Tiger Lily. Bob reportedly said, "I don't think so, love." Tina speaks of only seeing Tiger Lily a couple of times in her life and having reached out to the now 24-year-old with no luck. In a lighter note, Bob once shared a story about how he was shopping with a young Tiger Lily and they heard one of Bob's songs come on the speakers. Then an In Excess song came on afterwards. Tiger Lily said to Bob, "My real dad has a better voice." Sadly, tragedy struck the Geldof family again when, in 2014, Paula and Bob's middle daughter, Peaches, died at the age of 25 of a heroin overdose. Much like her mother, she was found deceased with her toddler near her. The last Instagram post she had shared had been an old photo of her and her mother. Peaches had been trying to kick her heroin addiction, and she had a loving husband and 2 young children. By all accounts, Peaches had had a challenging childhood, and she spoke about how losing her mother at the age of 11 was incredibly painful. This Michael Hutchins and Polly Yeats two-parter was difficult to research and write. Their story deals with suicide, drugs, and toxic relationships, and I sure as hell wanted to make sure I got this one right and fair. I think everyone wants to pick a villain in the Michael Hutchins, Polly Yeats, and Bob Geldof story, and at the time, the press certainly did. But what I realized from this research is that there were no winners or losers. Everyone shared a part of the blame. By all accounts, Paula had an issue with lying and manipulating and maybe throwing too much of herself into her relationship with a man who can never give all of himself to her. And by all accounts, Michael did drugs and possibly got Paula doing drugs and struggled with being a faithful, grounded man. And by all accounts, Bob had no time for Paula and Michael's bullshit, and his stoic, possibly cruel demeanor drove his ex-wife and her current lover into a darker place. But all three of them are humans, with individual strengths and weaknesses, who felt pain and sadness and anger, just like us non-celebrities do. Paula, Michael, and Bob had been reduced to caricatures by the press, and this dehumanization played a role in Paula and Michael's unraveling. All three deserve more. This is the story of toxic love, of two people who loved each other, but who probably shouldn't have been together, who brought out the worst in one another and couldn't break away. Love, or passion, or obligation, or a combo of all three, kept this toxic love affair going, but it was on a collision course to annihilation. Neither Michael or Paula survived, and the sad truth is, they might still be here today if they had never gotten together. Paula and Michael should be here, but it's as if their stars were destined to collide and then disintegrate. While writing this series, these lyrics from the INXS song New Sensation came to mind often. Love, baby, love, it's written all over your face. There's nothing better we could do than live forever. Well, that's all we've got to do. I want to end on something I thought a lot about while researching this episode. I listened to a lot of INXS records, and I was completely mesmerized by Michael. You either want to be him or sleep with him. He was young, handsome, on top of the world, famous, rich, and seemingly carefree. You can feel all of these desirable qualities in his voice. Then the stark reminder hits you. He died. He not only died, he ended his life. Even though the fame and the money and the talent probably gave him great happiness at times, something was still missing in his life. And it's a reminder that no matter how beautiful and rich and famous you are, you can be unhappy too. We are all human. If you have thoughts of suicide, please know you're not alone. Call the Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255. This episode was researched, written, and read by me, Lauren Modry. It was edited by Jonathan Luna, and Mike G wrote the theme song. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.